Before we get started with today's podcast, here at Walk On, we'd like to pay tribute to Dan Kay, who sadly passed away at the weekend. Dan worked at the Liverpool Echo for many years and was a former colleague to myself and a number of our team here at The Athletic. He was such a special person, a remarkably gifted writer and journalist, a tireless Hillsborough campaigner. He was the proudest Liverpoolian you could ever wish to meet. He was so knowledgeable and passionate, and he loved his club and his city, and he loved Merseyside. He was a true champion of social justice, someone who went out of his way to help those most in need. He was a kind, gentle and genuine soul. He will always be one of my very best and dearest friends. I know I'm not alone when I say I'm going to miss him very, very much. May he rest in peace and may his memory be a blessing.
The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your dedicated Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Liverpool are preparing for a trip to Leicester with the hunt for a place in next year's Champions League beginning to move into focus. We'll talk about the top four hopes, we'll answer some of your questions and plenty more alongside James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. But first, three words. Andy, I'll start with you.
Maximum points required, because if Liverpool want to give themselves any chance of that top four, they're going to need that.
Well, they certainly are. They certainly are. Kiva.
There is hope.
There is. And I wish they wouldn't do it to us in many ways. You know what I mean? I'd written it off a month ago, and now they've got me excited again. James?
I'm going for no messing about. Just get straight into them. The atmosphere will be bouncing early on, but just you can't give a team like Leicester with their fragile confidence levels under the amount of pressure they're going to be under on Monday night. You can't give them a sniff. So, yeah, no messing about.
Yeah, I'll say send Leicester down. You know what? We won't miss them anyway, will we? So let's see what they're saying on the Walk On podcast Facebook group. Patrick Hogan says, just win out. Dave Rimmer, optimism rising dangerously. Matthew Brown, reeling United in. And Andrew Moffat, well, it's not three words, but he says he tripped over his cat this morning and Anthony Taylor gave Brentford a free kick for you.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
Well, all right, we've got to talk about it. You know, we probably shouldn't. We don't want to, but we have to. The Champions League chase. James, is it on?
Is it on? I think we'll know before Liverpool kick off on Monday whether it's on or not, because what they have just done, I think, the last few weeks is made a race happen that didn't look like it was going to happen, and just a little bit of pressure. I still think you'd much rather be in Newcastle or Man United's position. You can't make any bones about that. And Liverpool, as Klopp said himself last week, have got their work cut out, just ensuring they win their last three, you know, make it 9 out of 9, get to 71 points. But yeah, we'll know a lot more by Monday before Liverpool play, because I still think out the two, the I think there's a better chance of Newcastle slipping up. You know, we're relying on some Big Sam magic at Elland Road on Saturday lunchtime. You know, I think that's probably more likely than the Wolves getting anything at Old Trafford. But United have stumbled, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I still think when you look at the fixtures, I think even with United in their current kind of status, I think they'll get the 8 points, I think, to ensure they finish ahead of Liverpool. But yeah, Newcastle are the ones for me. I still think there's a chance.
I can just see the headlines on Twitter. You know, James Pearce said Allardyce is better than Lopetegui. I can see that now. I can see how it works. Kiva, Leicester coming up, and they're sort of kind of appropriate because they were in the top opportunity for the top four twice and they fell out of it, and they were in the cup final and they kind of lost the focus. Kind of happened to United.
Well, I was thinking it might happen to Newcastle earlier on in the season when they started slipping up a little bit, and I thought about Leicester and those seasons where they got close and then just fell away because they didn't quite know what it takes to make the top four. And I think Newcastle are kind of in that bubble, but they seem to be just dealing with it so much better. And they just seem to be switched on to know that you've just got to keep winning games and hope for the very best. But I think you'd imagine there will be pressure on Newcastle and United now with Liverpool just winning. And this is what the message we've been saying all season. You know, win your games and that will put pressure on those above Liverpool in the table. And now we're getting towards the very end of the season and Liverpool are a point off United, Newcastle, you know, a little bit higher up. And just, I know they've got games in hand and stuff like that, but it does feel like Liverpool could sneak in the back door of the Champions League, and that would be quite something given the season that they've put us all through.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you come, it's like at the end of games when balls are humped into the area, and if they were humped in the first minute, the defenders, central defenders just nod them out. But in the last few seconds when the pressure's on, they do daft things. And the end of the season, like that, the pressure's just building and building. And when you consider that Liverpool have, well, I mean, they kind of lost that muscle memory of winning games, Andy, and seem to have got it back. I mean, it's been a really unconvincing winning streak, hasn't it? But, like, they've got that knack of winning games back, and suddenly Newcastle and United are losing games where they had a knack of winning. You know, is the seesaw, you know, moving up and down?
I hope so, and I hope it's moving in Liverpool's direction. But I think that's what scoreboard pressure can create, and it's what Liverpool haven't been able to apply throughout the season. But as you say, they have done these. You know, they have been on these winning runs in the past. They have been able to put, you know, those 6, 7, 8, 9 wins together when they've needed to, when they've been challenging for the title, and even when they were, you know, challenging for top four a couple of seasons ago. So they have refound that ability to, regardless of how well they play, win the game. And I think we've seen that in the performances. You know, it hasn't been, you know, this scintillating football all the way through every 90 minutes. There's been periods of it. But Liverpool have had to struggle. They've had to suffer. They've had to just find their way through games. And I think that is important at this stage of the season, because when you're playing the likes of, you know, those sides down the bottom, or those games do get harder and they feel harder, even though, you know, if you play them in September, you'd probably just win easily, or, you know, in Newcastle United's case, for example. So there is that pressure there. And, you know, Liverpool have the experience of being able to do, you know, put these, hopefully a 9-game winning run together. Will that be enough? We don't know. But you can still take that into next season regardless, can't you?
You can. Look at the games that Newcastle and United have got to play. Leeds, obviously, away for Newcastle on Saturday. Big Sam magic, as James said, you know, Brighton at home. Well, Brighton have got to be really stinging from the, you know, the defeat by Everton, haven't they? You know, the shame of that, the embarrassment, that's got to cause them to, you know, to come back and win. Leicester at home, they'll need the points to stay up. And Chelsea away, 3 points to Newcastle. James, I mean, is there anything wrong with my analysis there?
No, I think that's why I do think there's probably more chance out of the two of Newcastle or United. I still think, even though Newcastle need fewer points, I think their goal difference is better than Liverpool's. So I think they'd need 7 points. But you look at, they could easily lose to Leeds. If I think Allardyce, as limited as he is, he will make that a difficult game for Newcastle. And the same with Leicester. You want teams you're trying to catch at this point of the season coming up against teams who've got something to play for. And the only game that Newcastle have got against a team that arguably hasn't got anything to play for is Chelsea. But even that, you know, away on the final day, you know, with the talent that Chelsea have got, you know, and it will be Lampard's last game in charge, absolutely no pressure on them. You know, I don't think that's a gimme. I mean, looking at it as well, I didn't realise that, you know, United's goal difference is poor, isn't it? So actually, rather than 8 points, they probably need 9 to ensure they finish ahead of Liverpool. But again, when you look at the fixtures, you know, yeah, we hope Lopetegui can produce a miracle on the weekend, but you know, I think that's unrealistic. And then I think there are other two home games, Chelsea and Fulham. You'd expect them to win those three home games, as bad as they've been away from home. I think their away game is at Bournemouth, so that's why I think I'd love to be proved wrong, because there would be nothing sweeter than a late twist that involved getting Champions League football and denying Manchester United it. But yeah, I still think Newcastle is the bigger hope.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, United's home form has been fantastic all season, hasn't it, Kiva? But what we really need, throw Alisson up front, the cat among the pigeons, and, you know, just a little bit of chaos to end the season. Positive chaos.
Brentford tried to emulate it near Anfield. I think Liverpool don't necessarily need chaos. They just need to win their games. And we're kind of speaking about Man United and Newcastle as though, well, they could drop points there and whatever else. But Liverpool need to continue this run. And it looks like they're a team capable of doing that now. But we could quickly be 45 minutes into the game against Leicester on Monday, be scratching our heads thinking, oh, this has been that season again. So I don't think we're too far away from that still. That feeling that's just sort of stayed with us all season. So it's still up to Liverpool to just maintain that pressure and obviously do their, keep up their end of the bargain almost and take it to the last day. And that would be for Liverpool to salvage anything out of this season. Maybe it is just they might miss out on top four on the last day, or they might get it on the last day. And I think having something to fight for on the last day just felt so far away, didn't it? A couple of months back, especially the start of January with those early defeats to Brentford and, you know, whoever else. It just felt like, oh God, Liverpool might not get anything out of this season. And here we are. There is hope and they might just get something.
The worst thing is the regrets, the daft points dropped in games that, you know, you think was so winnable, Andy. You know, it's like, but I have to say, if they do win all the way out to the end of the season, I won't be thinking too much about regrets. I'll be thinking about positivity going into the summer, and I'll be thinking, can't wait for next season to start. And that is the way I'll rationalise it.
I think you're right. Regardless of sort of where Liverpool end up, you know, a month ago, as you said, we sort of, you know, cancelled out the thought of Champions League, and it was, the focus was about, right, okay, then, so what are we going to look like next season? What can you do? What can you build on? And what momentum can you take into the next season? And Liverpool did that when they managed to get top four in the COVID season. You know, when they went on that unbeaten run until the end of the season, and then they took that on into next season, used that momentum, used it really well, and, you know, nearly had the greatest season in the club's history. And while okay, Liverpool might not do that this time, it's, you know, at the same time, it's, if you can, you know, it looks like we've got a new style of play. You're going to have, you know, reinforcements coming in who are going to boost the squad, particularly in midfield, which, you know, we've talked about so much. So you want that positivity, you want that feel-good factor, and you definitely don't want to not win these three games and then have, and still, and then watch United or Newcastle slip up and think, oh God,
that's that'd be the worst, wouldn't it? That would be dreadful.
Exactly. But you're right, it is all about thinking ahead to next season, seeing players getting back into form, players learning new roles and getting better in them. And then you can take that and hopefully hit the ground running in pre-season and then going into the season.
And that's what we're all looking forward to. This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
The best word I can say that will describe this was boom.
Tony Evans here with Walk On, your dedicated Liverpool podcast. And I'm here with James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. Well, James, throwing coach Thomas Granemark is leaving after 5 years. Why is that? Can you explain why that's happening?
Yes. So Thomas Granemark, his contract effectively just isn't being renewed at the end of the season. Bit of a surprise because Jurgen Klopp and his staff have always spoken very highly of his work, and you know it's been a very successful period. When you think he came in the summer of 2018, and of course in that first season, you know, Liverpool win the Champions League, then the Super Cup, the Club World Cup, and ultimately the Premier League title. And it's been an area of their game that you can, you know, it's been clear for everyone to see that there's been a big improvement on. But my understanding, having spoken to Thomas, is that the role had just changed over a period. I think largely COVID related initially, because he was coming to what was, you know, initially Melwood and then the AXA 4 or 5 times a season, to spending a week each time to work with the players, both inside in terms of a video analysis, but also, you know, most importantly for him, time on the grass, going through routines, both in terms of offensive and defensive throw-ins. And then obviously COVID changed all of that in terms of not being able to travel. So his role became very much about doing an analysis package on every single game, on every throw-in, the good things, the bad things, the things that need to be improved upon. And he said it hadn't really gone back to how it was before. I think he said he only visited the AXA twice last season. Actually saw him at the AXA a couple of weeks ago, but he said that was actually his first visit since last July. So he'd gone, 9 months in between visits. When they started talking about potentially going forward, how it was going to work, he said, well, to have a proper influence as I want to have, I need to go back to having those 4 or 5 week-long visits a season. And Liverpool's response was, we don't feel as if we're in a position to make that kind of commitment. So I think we think it's probably best we go our separate ways. So, yeah, that's the kind of rationale behind it.
Okay. One of the things that strikes me, Kiva, is when things are malfunctioning on the pitch, invariably, behind the scenes, there are issues. And we know that have been all season. You know, it's in the recruitment departments. And Klopp's talk this week about making changes to training. Now, presumably, they'll shake things up in that area, you know, this summer anyway, whether it's people leaving or whether it's just trying to adapt the way they do things to changing circumstances.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, they're always looking to do new and different things. And I think, you know, the work Thomas did at Liverpool is something that perhaps they've almost learnt from themselves and are able to sort of implement that now going forward. I think, you know, you'd imagine just one session with them and you'd be, you know, I'd be throwing the ball a lot further, wouldn't I, than I can currently. Too many foul throws from me. But yeah, so I think, you know, Liverpool have always, I remember when he joined and they sort of got skittered at, didn't they? I mean, people were laughing at Liverpool for hiring a throwing coach. And it was like, you know, as James mentioned, what Thomas was able to do is get Liverpool from being among the very worst at taking throw-ins to a team that, you know, were the very best. And, you know, it was those small marginal gains, wasn't it, that helped Liverpool go on to do what they did in previous seasons. And that success, you know, even if that's just 1% improvement, it's gonna, you know, go towards 100% of a victory or a trophy, whatever it'll be. So I think Liverpool have always been quite creative in recent seasons, definitely Jordan Jürgen Klopp's tenure at the club, at doing that kind of thing and getting different perspectives, different coaches in. I think that should continue. Maybe there does need to be something new and exciting for us to, you know, be told that is happening at the club or to find out, because it feels like maybe that kind of thing from the outside seems to maybe have stalled. But, you know, it's maybe what we're not hearing about what does go on at the club, or whether, you know, they want to kind of privatise that a little bit more now going forward as well, because, you know, there is so much written and said about a lot, isn't that? And maybe, you know, it's probably good to keep things secret as well, given that you're battling it out with different teams.
We're journalists. We don't believe in any secrecy. We've got to get it all out there as soon as we hear it.
Well, that's what we'll try and do, yeah.
But you know what? I'd lived in the States for a while, you know, sort of in the 90s. And I come back. And I was like, astounded. I've been watching basketball and I've seen the way, you know, they regularly have put-ins, you know, they throw the ball in from the side. And the movement, everyone's moving, everyone's, you know, got their own roles to play so they can open up space and they can, well, come on. And I was watching, you know, go to the match and you watch it and they take a throw-in, someone lobs it down the line, nods it on, and you go for the second ball. And they are like, why doesn't everyone have throwing coaches? You know, it's as important as as you know, sort of free kicks and working on free kicks. You know, keeping possession is crucial. Well, I mean, you know, you can see why in these circumstances he's left. But, I mean, Andy, do you think this is a sign of a change in the thinking at all?
I'm not sure necessarily a change in the thinking. I think I'd go along with the idea of you know, you want to keep things fresh and you want to change things up. You do wonder if the sort of what the role had been reduced to, if Liverpool feel that they might be able to have someone, you know, on the ground every day who can do the same sort of type of analysis and maybe be able to impact things, you know, on a daily basis rather than, you know, sort of every now and again. But I think you do obviously need to freshen things up, because and you do need to look for the next thing, because when Liverpool got that set piece coach, sorry, the throwing coach, it was like, why are they doing this? But then you start to see, you know, those types of coaches, you know, set piece coaches become more and more of a thing. So Liverpool was sort of a bit of ahead of the game in that regard. And maybe it's a case of trying to be ahead of the game again in terms of where they go in a different direction that they might be looking for. But it is all about those marginal improvements, and that happens by trying to be ahead of the curve and trying to be the first to think of things, but also to refresh things, because players can get bored of doing the same things time and time again, hearing the same voices, and that's why you have to keep things difference and change things, and from training to analysis to all those types of things. So it might be a move in a different direction because they feel that might be the best thing for the players. But what you would say is fair play to Thomas, because he did make an impact on Liverpool's throw-ins, because I used to feel like it was basically giving the opposition the ball whenever Liverpool got a throw-in because he was so bad at it. So it has improved, and you know, you hope that Liverpool can continue to make or find those little areas of improvement in different areas of the pitch that maybe other teams haven't thought of.
Yeah, definitely. Talking of the summer, you know, what could be happening then, we've got a couple of listener questions from the Facebook group. So, James, Shane Roach has asked, if Liverpool start next season with a front four, what four would you pick? Front four?
Well, for a start, I don't think he will play with a front four. I know he threw four out there, didn't he, from the start last weekend, which I wouldn't say was a great success. And especially, I think as well, we're going to see, we know, an influx of midfielders this summer, certainly two, potentially three. So, yeah, I'd be very surprised if he did. Well, I think you'd have to have Diaz on the left, obviously Salah right. And then, see, I'm still a Nunes, firmly in the Nunes believer camp. So I think I'd probably go Nunes with Gakpo just behind, which is harsh on Jota. But yeah, that's probably the way I'd go if we were talking about... This is on the basis that, you know, you're talking about Nunes coming back, looking like he's more in tune with what's required of him for the start of next season.
Yeah, I mean, the front four seems to me... be a strange setup. I was a bit taken aback on Saturday when I saw the team. I was like, oh, how's that going to work? And it ends up probably with Gakpo slotting back into the midfield, wouldn't it, Kiva? I mean, you can't see a front four, can you?
No, I don't think so. I think you see four attacking players on the pitch, but maybe like Gakpo plays in midfield and that kind of thing, because obviously, you know, Liverpool will have decisions to make next season. Obviously, there'll be no Roberto Firmino, so Salah will be the last of the famous front three, and you'd imagine that front three will continue anyway with Diaz, Jota, Nunes, Gakpo. But whether, you know, Gakpo is a player, I can kind of see the reasoning behind just throwing him into midfield, to be honest, because, you know, his best actions on the pitch are often in the middle of the pitch, picking the ball up and holding players off.
Yeah, but that's the same with Firmino,
forward,
wasn't it? Firmino was brilliant doing that, dropping deeper and that, yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely think you can have that kind of false nine kind of player playing a bit deeper, and then just your normal sort of front three ahead of them. So, yeah, I can't see a formation of four up front, but technically you could have four attacking players on the pitch, because that is something Klopp's done in the past as well. It's a way to get your goal scorers on the pitch as well, isn't it?
Yeah, Andy, I mean, you know, a front four. Why not go all Allardyce and go 4-4-2.
Well, to be fair,
it's probably about as likely, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Klopp has used it, hasn't he? I mean, I always remember that game away at Man City when he decided to go four up front, and that was a bit, that just thought was mad, and it worked for a period of the game. And there was a time this season, wasn't there, where he looked to go to that. You know, he went to Arsenal away, didn't he, and effectively played that until Diaz got injured, and then. Basically, they only had about two forwards to use, so there was no chance they could do that. So it might be something that in games, but I would imagine it's more of an in-game switch if things aren't going well, that they might go to that. I think Gakpo can definitely play that sort of number 10 role, you know, as one of those two higher midfielders. And I think he showed, you know, in patches that he can do that. And I think that's the only way you would get four on the pitch. I think Gakpo is integral to that. I think he has to, if you're playing with a four, he has to play. I don't think you could do it with the Diaz, Jota, Nunes, Salah combination. I just don't think that would quite work, because you'd probably struggle to link it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's probably something you'll likely see in game if things aren't going well. But hopefully that won't be the case too often, because Liverpool will be winning.
Yeah, well, hopefully, Shane, we'll never see it. Anyway, Carl Phillips wants to know, which players from relegation-threatened clubs could Liverpool try to sign this summer? And he's mentioned Ward-Prowse, Maddison, Tielemans. Well, you know, it's a reasonable question, because, you know, Wijnaldum, Robertson, Shaqiri all came from relegated clubs, and that's, you know, it's fertile ground, isn't it? They're trying to offload some wages. Is there anyone you think's a possibility there, James?
Yeah, I mean, Tielemans, I'd put in the in that bracket of being a possibility just because he's free. I think if you were talking about a significant fee for him, then probably not. What is he, 26, I think. But yeah, I think if, especially if, I don't know, say for argument's sake, Liverpool go and sign, you know, McAllister and a Mount, and you're probably looking at, you know, if you were to get the pair of them, you're not getting much change, if any, out of 120, 130 million pound. And if you felt you needed a third one, then I think in that regard, Tielemans would make sense. You couldn't justify him being one of your two frontline midfielders you were bringing in. Madison, I can't see really. I think he's got a year left on his deal.
And after his penalty against Everton, I mean, how badly did he curse here? That was one of the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah, and the same Ward-Prowse, I don't think that wouldn't make any sense to me. No. He's 28, and I'm sure he will want to, you know, he's a very good player. You'd argue about him just for his free kicks, but, you know, I don't really see him being a Liverpool signing. The only one I think possibly at Southampton would be Kaleta Kar, the Croatian centre-back, because Liverpool, we know, really do need probably to bolster themselves in that department this summer. And Kaleta Kar he's definitely one that Liverpool have looked at previously. I don't know whether he's still someone of interest at this point, but the fact that they'd scouted him previously, and I think he'd been considered. So yeah, I'd put that as a possibility as well.
Yeah, Kiva, I mean, you think if Chelsea would have sacked Thomas Tuchel before the season started, we might be talking about Mason Mount as a team, a player from a relegated team. But well, what about Tyler Adams? If Leeds go down, what do you reckon to him?
Yeah, he's a fantastic footballer, isn't he? He's not someone that I think has been linked with Liverpool, but I guess you would imagine if Leeds do go down, and some of the best players will want to play in the Premier League or, you know, in top league. So I guess it'll be interesting to see, won't it, from any relegated club. You always get that kind of players that sort of like stick. And then Andy will know a lot about this with Burnley this season. You get the players that stick and others that twist. And it's definitely a market, a unique market, isn't it, in a way of, you know, you can get a team, a player from a team that you didn't expect to go down, a quality player that might just be looking for, I guess, a way out. But I think it's always interesting to see, isn't it? Like who does go and who stays and that kind of thing. And at the minute, you kind of still don't know who's going down in a way out of, I mean, you'd imagine Southampton are pretty much gone and maybe have been for a while. And then Leeds and Leicester not looking great after Everton's win, are they? So it'd be interesting to see. Any Everton players, if they go, Tone?
No, categorically. I think looking at that squad, I don't think Everton want them, never mind us. But Andy, you've been this season a championship correspondent in a sense, because you see Burnley all the time, and you've just been promoted along with Burnley. Yeah. Anyone, not relegated sides, but anyone down the championship that's really stood out to you that may not necessarily be coming up or even in the playoffs, someone round about that stood up that you think, you know what, he could do a job for us?
The Coventry side of Victor Gyökeres has been excellent, and probably the best player I've seen that wasn't playing for Burnley down in the championship this season. I just think he's got everything that would be a success in the Premier League. Although I don't think it's difficult, because I don't think any of them are probably Liverpool level. The only one possibly is Alex Scott at Bristol City, who, I'll be honest, didn't really stand out in the two games that Burnley played when Burnley played Bristol City. But from watching other championship games and watching him, you can see all the reasons why he looks like he's going to be a top player. So they would probably be the two. Don't take anyone from Burnley, because I want them to stay up. I think in terms of just on the relegation threat side, a couple of names that might be of sort of interest to me anyway would be sort of like Harvey Barnes, who has probably stalled this season but has the potential to be really, really good and has caused Liverpool problems. Hopefully not on Monday. And then Forrest too. Well, I think Forrest will probably stay up. Brennan Johnson and Taiwo Awoniyi, who obviously a former Liverpool player, those two have impressed me this season, and you feel could do a job and be impactful, you know, a bit higher up in better teams. But there's not sort of anyone, I don't think, that's a massive standout as like, you've got to go and get them from one of the teams going down.
Well, thanks, Carl, for that question. And remember, you can send us your queries at the Walk On Podcast Facebook group. This is Walk On from The Athletic with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. Well, Monday night. What do we expect here? I mean, because Leicester have got a fair amount of talent in the squad, but clearly things went wrong under our old good mate Brendan Rodgers. And now they seem to be almost completely without direction and very little confidence. But they have been up when we've gone there for the game in the past, haven't they, James?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, Liverpool have lost their last two visits to the King Power Stadium. And I remember that one, you know, it was Christmas time, wasn't it, last season? Liverpool beaten 1-0. And yeah, when the crowd really do get behind them there, it can be a difficult place to play. But yeah, they're a strange team because when you look at them, out of all the teams that are down there, they're the one team you look at and you look at the names on the team sheet and you think, how on earth have you ended up in this mess?
Because too good to go down?
Yeah, the table never lies, Tony. You think, yeah, that's why, to be honest, all the way along, I've thought, no, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. They'll put together a run of three or four wins. And obviously now you think, I don't think they are going to be fine. And they probably need to win at least two of their last three, you know, Liverpool at home, Newcastle away, West Ham at home. They've got themselves in one hell of a mess. I thought it was bizarre at the time bringing in Dean Smith. Of all the people you could pick, I'm just not quite sure how on earth, you know, how they came to that rationale that if you're going to get rid of Brendan Rodgers, that Dean Smith was the man who was going to save you. Because I'm not sure there was anything in the last couple of years to suggest that would be the case. I know you take the Mickey out of Allardyce, but at least he's got previous for being a firefighter. You know, even someone like Neil Warnock, you know, bit of a dinosaur, but incredible job he did at Huddersfield. Yeah, I just thought that was a bizarre one. And then you watch them against Everton, and there was spells in the game against Everton where you thought, you know, they're a really talented team and caused a lot of problems. And you look at, you know, the vision of Maddison and, you know, Andy mentioned before, Harvey Barnes and Vardy, even at the age he's still at, you know, that ability to run in behind and cause issues, but just so open. And Everton could easily have won that game the other week. And then they go to Fulham, where, you know, again, I thought, surely that's one of those games that Leicester will be okay in because Fulham had players missing and, you know, nothing really to play for. They concede five in a, you know, crazy, crazy game. So, it's been, you know, if they do go down, it's some fall, isn't it, from, you know, that amazing high of winning the Premier League. And then, you know, I don't think any Leicester fan ever thought that was ever going to be replicated. But, you know, what were they under Rodgers? Fifth and eighth, I think. So it's, yeah, to suddenly find themselves in this relegation scrap, it's been a huge drop off.
Yeah, and FA Cup winners 2 years ago, it's amazing. But again, I agree with you there, James. You know, you're sitting there, you're in a Leicester boardroom, you go, okay, we need someone dynamic, we need someone with presence. Dean Smith's the man. I mean, even the name's boring. Could there be a more boring name than Dean Smith? Possibly. I mean, you know, even John Smith, to me, is less boring than Dean Smith. I don't know, Kiefer. But a Monday night game for us. How did you think the schedule on it affects the teams in the, you know, the so-called race for the top four? The fact that United and Newcastle play before, does it put pressure on them or does it turn up the pressure on us?
I think it's always been interesting, hasn't it, that, you know, when Liverpool have been in title races, particularly with Man City, I used to think sometimes playing before them would be better because you just, you know, you get your 3 points on the board and then you get to watch them maybe slip up, you know, which City hardly ever did. So that was always a pointless exercise. And then, you know, sometimes Liverpool will play after and that little bit of pressure would be on them. But then that relief of when they do win sort of would feed into, you know, a good positive energy, momentum and everything else. So I think it's the same with this, isn't it? The, you know, last weekend, obviously Liverpool played, won, and then, you know, got to see what happened after that. And I think that is helpful and nice to, you know, enjoy the weekend, I guess, on the back of a win. But then, you know, this weekend it'll obviously be different. Liverpool will be the last team to play and we'll kind of know where they stand even more. You know, if those teams have slipped up, it's Liverpool have to win. I mean, they have to win anyway, but it should just give them that little bit of energy. And I think we did see that in the sort of the relegation battle this weekend, didn't we? The sort of knock-on effects of teams losing. I think that really did help Everton as well. That just gave them a, you know, seeing Leicester lose in the way they did and then them going out playing and seeing, I think, did Forest win. It was just kind of those knock-on effects of, I guess, because they do keep an eye on it, don't they? So Liverpool will know, you know, how Man United have got on, how Newcastle have got on. I think that should be something that will inspire them if they need that extra little bit of incentive.
As you say, it didn't do Everton any harm at all, did it? You know, it worked really in their favour. And I think, again, if you do win, I mean, I remember in the races with City at the times when they played afterwards, you know, you win and you think, good, good, it puts the pressure on them. But, you know, when they come back and won, it's discouraging to you as well. You know, sort of going into it. So, I don't know, swings and roundabouts, Andy, swings and roundabouts. What we do know is that Liverpool need to win. The performance doesn't matter. All that matters is the 3 points.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it would be a concern if you lost to this Leicester side, because I think defensively they are horrendous. And saying that now, they'll probably keep a clean sheet, so I shouldn't have said that. But yeah, it is. It's all about Liverpool doing it. And it would have been nice to, I think, have played first and, you know, and win, and then you go above United and you draw level and points with Newcastle, and okay, you've played two games more, but suddenly they're not looking behind, they're looking up at you in United's case anyway. So, but equally, you've just got to do your own job and that's all you can do, and then you've just got to hope that there are the slip up. And the difference is this isn't the title race, this isn't Man City, this is a Newcastle and United and a Man United team who have both got flaws and both, as they showed last weekend, can drop points. And we've just got to hope that they keep doing that until the end of the season and Liverpool don't drop any.
Well, I hope that for United and Newcastle, we get the Eurovision classic line, nil point. That would make the weekend perfect. And that's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James, Kiefer and Andy, and you for joining us. We'll catch you on Tuesday after the game against Leicester. Yes, it's going to be a long, long weekend.
The Athletic.